Remembering John Lennon on the 25th anniversary of his murder by Mark David Chapman on that cold December night in 1980 when he was snuffed out by a man who wanted to become John Lennon. That's what the idea was behind Mark David Chapman's motive that night. The man carrying Catcher in the Rye and a 38 caliber handgun put three shots into John Lennon's back. Yes, his back. That's the kind of coward we're talking about here. And then sat there calmly until the police came and took him away. And Chapman tries to get some sort of clemency every time his parole hearing comes around. I don't think he's got a chance of getting out of there for a very, 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 very long time. Still to come this afternoon on our John Lennon Remembrance, an interview I did 17 years ago with Julia Baird, who was John's sister. Also, Larry Kane, who traveled with the Beatles as a radio reporter in 1964 and 1965 and befriended Lennon and spoke to him many, many times through the years, had a heated argument one night on a plane from here in St. Louis back to New York after the Beatles performed at Busch Stadium in 1966. And Larry wrote a book several years ago called Ticket to Ride, which was all about his adventures with them, and now has a brand new book called Lennon Revealed, in which he interviews all sorts of people who knew John Lennon or knew of the legend of John Lennon, and also includes more of his own stories of his interactions with both John and Yoko and the rest of the Beatles through the years. I'm happy to welcome Larry Kane back to the Paul Harris Show. How are you?
Oh, great to be on Camo X in St. Louis, as usual. I love it.
It's a pleasure having you here. So who did you interview for the book, and who was the hardest one to get?
Well, the hardest one to get was Yoko Ono, of course, because it's tough. She's always applying conditions to the interviews. There were no conditions for this one, and she also knew that I'd interviewed May Pang, who was John's lover during the 1970s, who she fixed him up with. So she knew everything out front. I guess she was charmed by my graciousness. I don't know what it was. But we had a very long interview, and she provides explosive details about their relationship in this book.
Yeah, she talks about a lot of things that I think a lot of people didn't know, including her reactions to him having affairs, and in fact, at one point, having an affair in the next room.
Yeah, that was, you know, it's interesting. She called me. I'm glad you brought that up, because she called me, I would guess, 3 months after the initial interview and told me she had something to add. Now, when you call somebody and say you have something to add, that's very unusual. And she added this elaborate story about being with John at a party on election night 1972 when George McGovern lost, and how John made love to another woman in a room next to her, and how humiliated she was, and she knew there were problems in her marriage. And that was the prerequisite. That's what she used as the requirement for something she would do 6 months later that was also unthinkable. She fixed John up with her secretary, May Pang. And then John had a 20-month relationship with May, and another relationship that also lasted for actually 4 or 5 months after that. So 4 or 5 years after that. So, I mean, this was an amazing, startling detail, but also the intimate details of what their relationship was all about, I was very surprised about.
Yoko takes credit for turning John into a feminist, doesn't she?
Absolutely. This is a guy who is a domestic abuser who she taught a lot of, and also May as well, taught a lot about women and life today and how they live and what they face. And there's no question in my mind that John Lennon was seriously impacted by Yoko Ono and May Pang and his first wife, but mostly by Yoko. You have to give her credit for how she changed his view of the world in the late 1970s.
Is it safe to say that John Lennon had a tragic childhood, Larry?
I would say that John Lennon, like many other people that are not well known, had a disappointing childhood. Tragic is, well, you could say it's tragic. His father wasn't around. His mother was killed when he was 15. She was struck and killed by a car. His best friend, Stuart Sutcliffe, who was a member of the Beatles, somebody he loved, was beaten by John when he decided to leave the group, and he suffered a brain hemorrhage. It might have been a direct or indirect result of that. His first marriage to Cynthia Lennon was a bust. It was a shotgun wedding. He was a bad father. He became a good father the second time around when, dealing with Sean, became the first public stay-at-home dad in America. It was a very, very powerful connection that he had with this woman, and the women changed him. But his childhood was really flawed. And you know something? I don't care who you are. When you have a problem like that in your childhood, when you cannot function properly, when you grow up angry, you act it out in many different ways. And John Lennon acted it out to other people very brutally, but he also acted it out, fortunately for us, to a great mass of people who enjoyed and loved his music and his times.
He carried that burden with him, didn't he?
He really did. And, you know, a lot of what he wrote was about what he was feeling at that time of his life. I'm a loser. I'm not what I appear to be. Help, I need somebody. All the various songs of John Lennon's life were about the way he was. Mother, you had me, but I didn't have you, which he wrote in 1970. The angry songs against Paul McCartney, which Paul started with a song called Too Many People, and John followed with How Do You Sleep.
Mm-hmm.
It was a battle between the two, an emotional battle in public, and they reconciled that. That was just two friends having a lot of familiarity breeding contempt. They were people who were, without question, very good friends. They weren't brothers, but they were friends. John also had a paternal instinct toward Ringo Starr and George Harrison. And George Harrison, ironically, was the one who leveled him to pieces about the idea of Yoko being around in the studio. He hated that. But I will tell you this much. He also was a good friend to John, and he loved John despite that, and John loved him. McCartney was a different story. There were always some differences there culturally and emotionally, and they were friends, but they never quite fully reconciled to where they were back in the 1960s.
You used both paternal and reconcile in that discussion there, and makes me wonder if he ever reconciled his paternal instincts with his first son, Julian Lennon. Did they ever?
They tried, but it never worked. Julian Lennon lives a private life today as a restaurant out in California, prefers not to be in the public spotlight, and I think that's the way he wants to live his life.
Here's the statement he released yesterday. He says, I've always had very mixed feelings about Dad. He was the father I loved who let me down in so many ways. It's painful to think that his early death robbed me of the chance for us to know each other. He's now 42 years old, older than his dad was when he died.
Well, I think he's pretty bitter.
I think so, too.
And I think John was pretty bitter about the way his father treated him. And so it sometimes rolls down from generation to generation. And I think in that regard, it was a bad scene. There's no question about it.
Let's talk about something a little offbeat. And I don't think people know this story because I didn't know it until I read it in your book. The Philadelphia Marathon weekend in which you talked John Lennon into being a TV weatherman. This is such a great story. Take me from the beginning, if you would.
Well, he decided to come down after a request by me and several other people. He decided to come down to join us in a Helping Hand radio marathon that was co-sponsored by the television station where I was the anchor. And he agreed to come down. He arrives by train. I take him through the city. We take him to the station. The DJs did not believe he would be there. They were astounded.
What year was this, Larry?
1975, May 18th, 19th, and 20th. I believe it was Mother's Day weekend, and that was part of the Helping Hand Marathon at that time. I think it was, or it might have been the week after Mother's Day. And they treated him beautifully. He loved being on the air. He raised a lot of money. But more than anything else, he met at least 2,000 people, he believes, who gave him the kind of solace he needed. He needed to meet people. He needed to meet ordinary people.
Now, when you say he met people, you don't mean he just stood in front of a crowd and waved to them.
Oh, no. He shook hands with people on a receiving line, and he loved it. As I told you, or maybe I was telling somebody else, he asked one of the women in the crowd if she would make love to him. And she looked at him and said, "Why, Mr. Lennon, of course not." And he said, "Can we have a rain check?" And it's just so outrageous. That night, Friday night that he was there, he asked me to go on the air, and he said he'd like to do the weather. And the video of the film of the weather on the air is part of the DVD that comes with the book, along with the last filmed interview with John Lennon and Paul McCartney. And it's quite a piece of film.
It is. I'm going to play a little piece of that interview that you did with the two of them in 1968. But I'm fascinated by this Philadelphia weekend because we're kind of going over it quickly. But what's amazing about this is that here's a guy who just a few years earlier, had been one of the most famous people in the world. And here we are 5 years after the breakup of the Beatles. He's got a successful solo career going. He hadn't gone into the 5 years of hiding that he did shortly after that. And here he is showing up and 2,000 people are there. And he was sitting in the radio station answering phones and talking to people and doing requests and just having a fantastic time, wasn't he?
He really was. It was just before he died, we talked about that weekend and how much fun it was and how it was the only time in his life since the advent of the Beatles that he really had an opportunity to be with real people, and he loved it.
Now, let me play this piece of audio that is included on the DVD that's in Larry's book, Lennon Revealed. This is the last interview that we know of that Paul and John did together, and this was 1968. Where and when? Larry?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. A little too much interview today. 1968, the St. Regis Hotel in downtown Manhattan, in the Midtown Manhattan, and it was an interview after they announced the creation of Apple, and it was the last, we believe, the last filmed interview they ever did.
Here they are explaining Apple Corps.
What is Apple, John?
It's a company we're setting up which involves records, films, electronics, which make records and films work, and what's it called, manufacturing?
Yeah, it does a few things.
You know, the byproducts that end up with Larry Page T-shirts and that.
It's just trying to mix business with enjoyment.
Pleasure.
Because we're in business, you know, we find ourselves in business.
Are you the directors? Are you the directors of this?
Yeah. But, like, all the profits won't go into our pockets. They'll go to help people, but not like a charity.
What do you plan?
Somebody wants to make a film, and they go to a company and they get shown into the waste paper bin. And nothing ever happens, so they go around, they make an underground one, and it goes round and round underground, and a lot of people never see it.
Nice.
So if they come to us, they won't stand a chance. But we hope to make a thing that's free, where people can just come and do and record, and not have to ask, could we have another microphone in the studio, because we haven't had a hit yet.
Larry Kane with both Paul McCartney and John Lennon in 1968, the last interview the two of them ever did together. Here we are celebrating.
Interestingly enough, a month after that interview, I was in England with them.
Mm-hmm.
And they introduced me to a young woman who was one of Apple's first clients. Her name was Mary Hopkin.
Mm-hmm.
And the song with Those Were the Days, My Friend.
Huh.
11 million copies.
Wow.
And McCartney spotted her, got the talent done, arranged the music, and they began their dream of helping other artists. Of course, James Taylor was one of their first.
And
a lot of people forget that.
Most successful through the years, absolutely. Larry first got to know these guys in 1964 when he was working at a radio station in Miami, and at age 21 got to hang out with the most popular rock band in the world and actually go on tour with them as they toured around the United States, and then stayed in touch with them and was part of the 1965 tour as well. And then in 1966, when they were back in the States, they came to St. Louis, and even though you were not on that entire tour, you came with them and saw them performing at Busch Stadium that night, right?
It was amazing. I just finished my basic training in the Air Force about a month earlier, and I decided to take a little time off, and he saw me with my head shaven in the locker room, I guess the Cardinals locker room at Busch Stadium, and he almost took my head off. He spent 3 hours on the plane from St. Louis to New York arguing about why I should leave the country and join Apple, and join the Beatles organization, and get out of the country before it was too late. And I explained to him that this was my obligation and I was going to fulfill it.
He was, at that time, much ahead of the rest of the country and the world in speaking out against the Vietnam War. In fact, he was rather outspoken on lots of things in many of the conversations that you had with him. Did Brian Epstein try to keep the Beatles, and especially John, from being outspoken?
Well, he wanted to muzzle them, but he couldn't. They were just four guys who had too big of a brain and too much of an intellectual insight to do that. So he wasn't about to muzzle them, and especially Lennon. And, you know, every time I interviewed the guys and he was around and he'd hear me ask a question about racial intolerance or something like that, his eyes would roll and I thought he was going to collapse. But he wanted to keep the Beatles out of politics, but there was no way you were going to do that,
no.
Especially with John Lennon.
One of the things that John got in trouble for were his legendary comments about the Beatles being more popular than Jesus. noises, which he later had to apologize for, but it led to Beatle record burnings throughout the Bible Belt in this country. What do you think the reaction would be today of somebody who were to say something along the same lines?
About the same.
I agree.
About the same. I don't think anything's changed. I think that we still live in a very spiritual country, and it may be even worse now. Because the battle lines are drawn, you know, as suddenly in this country, if you're a liberal, you can't be religious, which is absurd. If you're a conservative, that you can't be tolerant. You know, everybody has their labels in our society this time, and that's how people get elected, by labeling people. And unfortunately, you can't label me because I'm not going to tell you what I am. You
right.
know what I mean?
Isn't it interesting that at the height of Beatlemania, it was a generational thing. Now it's not a generational thing. It's a geographical thing, or so some people would
thing.
Make you believe. Red state
yeah,
versus
I would think so. But people at the top who play that kind of politics can win that way, and they know that. And, you know, partisan marginalized politics can win elections even on a national basis, whether it's Republican or Democrat. What happens there is that when you take the middle away, you live in a very dangerous society.
Absolutely. Now, that being said, do you think the song Imagine could be released and become a hit today?
Absolutely. That's different. Although it says, imagine no religion, imagine no heaven, and imagine no possessions, I think it would be a hit today. It was a hit after he died. I think that people who might be offended by the music, by the lyrics, still view it as a beautiful song of a utopia. And the fact is that John Lennon viewed this song as the march toward utopia, but unfortunately the human condition says that's not going to happen. Nevertheless, it was a very naive look at the world. That is a beautiful song that people enjoy.
Yeah, I agree that it was a naive look. And it's funny when you look back at some of the TV appearances he did, a week that John and Yoko did with Mike Douglas in the early 70s. I watched it on DVD about a year ago, and I couldn't help but thinking to myself, well, this guy had no clue at the time of what reality was like, or just was living in a different reality from the rest of us.
I think he was living in a reality, his own reality was, which was, why do we have wars? Why do we have this problem? That religion might be a part of the entire problem to some people. That if there was no heaven, what would we do if we had no heaven to look forward to? I think it was a very, very prophetic song. And but I do agree that things have not changed all that much. In fact, they may become more militant in terms of his comment about Jesus, which was not a comment that was quoted correctly. He was basically asked, why are the Beatles so big? And he was really saying, it's absurd that we're so big.
Right.
We might be bigger than Jesus.
Yep.
And that got him in trouble, and of course people jumped on that, as they jump on the words of a lot of people before they have a chance to talk.
Larry, what was the last time you talked to John Lennon?
About 7 days before he died. It was on the telephone. And he was telling me about Double Fantasy, the album, and the songs in the album, and how excited he was about it, and talking about his child and his wife, very much in love with her at that time. And the picture on the front of the book is a picture taken about 6 days before he died by a wonderful photographer named Alan Tannenbaum, and very proud to have been associated with him. And unfortunately, I have to run over to Strawberry Fields and do some work over there.
Is that what they're doing now?
Yeah.
Yeah. Before you go, can you just tell me what it was like being an anchorman the night that the news came from New York that he was shot dead?
Doesn't get any worse than that as a broadcaster. We're all kind of jaded because we report deaths every day. And then we forget that these deaths have victims, people who are grieving. And that night, when I heard about it and went on the air with it, it was not great.
Yeah, especially with somebody that you knew and admired so much.
I don't want to get over dramatic, but I'll tell you that it was hard for me to hold it.
I imagine. Right. Well, as I congratulated you on Ticket to Ride, I congratulate you again on Lennon Revealed. It's a terrific book, and you give great insight into the man.
And I'll be on the air with Mr. Carney tonight, they tell me.
Oh, good.
At 11:10.
Okay.
Eastern time. Now, he's somewhat of a legend, right?
Yes, he is.
And so are you, and it's great to talk to you. And I appreciate the conversation now, and I guess we had one a couple of years ago, didn't we?
Yeah, we did when Ticket to Ride came out, and also on the 40th anniversary of the first Ed Sullivan show.
And also, by the way, we have a very hot Senate race in Pennsylvania next year between Rick Santorum and Bob Casey.
Yep.
We should talk about that at some point next year. It's going to be very hot, so let me know.
All right, Larry, thanks.
Take care.
Larry Kane, the book is called Lennon Revealed. There is included in there these tremendous stories that you've heard today, plus many, many more. And there's a DVD in there that does include that final interview with Lennon and McCartney from 1968 and the video of John Lennon doing the local weather. Larry was the anchor man, and he throws it to John Lennon with the weather. It was not the kind of weather forecast that anybody could base their life on by any means. It was pretty much gibberish that night, but that's a historic piece of tape, and he's got some rather interesting stories in there, some that I, as a Beatlemaniac, had never heard before. So my thanks to Larry Kane for joining me here on the Paul Harris Show. It's News Talk 1120 KMOX.